Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
You're listening to Season 5 of Mother May I Sleep With Podcast. I'm your host, Molly McAleer. All right, you guys, tonight we have a very exciting person on the show. His name is Dylan. Dylan, I don't know your last name.
My last name is Aguilera, like Christina.
Oh, sick. Yeah. Okay, which is why you go by El Rey now.
Right, because Rey is my middle name.
The king.
Exactly.
And that's you.
Yeah, no, that's exactly who I am.
So you and I met because of my friend Alvina Roman,
right,
who has always had around many young, talented people.
Yeah, she
in
likes
her
me young.
Like Pamela Smart herself,
that's exactly right.
No, I'm not going to incriminate my friend. I will tell you, though, as much as I love Alvina, I'm so happy she didn't come because she can be, like the police in this movie, a real fucking cock block.
I agree with you. Like, she's blocked it many times for me.
Sorry. Alvina typically cock blocks because she works in PR and she's just looking out for the best interests of her clients.
Right. And it just kind of sucks because it's like having another mom around and I moved out of my house for a reason.
But it's also why everyone needs an Alvina.
Of course. Everyone. I would, you know, wouldn't trade it for the world, you know?
So. Yeah, of course. So she introduced us at my store where I sell Amazon customer returns with our boy Sean.
Right,
yeah. He's my favorite pop star. Yes. I've never heard any of Sean's music, but he is my favorite pop star. Is it Cavallari, like Kristen?
Cavalier.
Cavalier.
Well, see, okay, so it's actually, I think it's like, it's Cavalier-y.
But yeah,
like, you know,
what good friends we are. I don't I don't know your name, honey. But we met through there, and I just saw a spark in your eye. I think you're fabulous.
Oh,
and
you.
I said to Alvina, I want him to come maybe make a podcast with me all together for an exciting project, which I don't know if it's launched yet by the time you're listening to this. Today is, just for reference for everyone, today is the day of the 30 to 50 feral hogs, which is, I think, an important day in American history. And I said, he's got to come down and do a movie with me. So I sent you a bunch of options.
Yes, you did.
And you narrowed it down to two. We won't give away what the other one is yet.
Not yet, no.
Because who knows?
Right.
But we did Murder in New Hampshire, which is all about Pamela Smart, a woman who slept with her damn student and then got him to kill her husband.
That's exactly right. And the title's, let me just say, it's pretty straightforward. It's a murder and it did take place in New Hampshire.
No, so I'm from Massachusetts, right? And I wouldn't say I have the best relationship with New Hampshire.
Okay.
In fact, I don't love it.
I honestly didn't even remember it was a state until I saw this movie.
It's fully a state. I went to camp there. I just, in my experience with people from New Hampshire, they love a fight.
Okay.
They love to throw. And I know why. It's cold and they're bored.
Right? Exactly, yeah.
Which is how stuff like this happens. This whole movie could only happen in New Hampshire or wherever Mary Kay Letourneau was from or all the other places where people, that's a real, find me a teacher sleeping with her student and tell me that they don't live in cold weather.
This is definitely like, you know, like a New Hampshire, Vermont, Delaware type of situation.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, anyway. I didn't really realize that this was the movie that I picked for a 19-year-old boy to come record with me when I sent it to you. I knew like it was, kind of a fucked up thing. Now, this movie, for everyone at home who's wondering, this isn't the one with Nicole Kidman. This is the original with Helen Hunt.
Yes.
It came out in the 90s.
91.
Yeah, and it's iconic. I was too young to remember this case, but it's important because this was the first televised,
like big
crime ever. Yeah,
okay,
like this
crazy.
Was
no
out
idea.
There with Casey Anthony. This is out there with like OJ for sure. Mm-hmm. This was the first one.
Okay.
And I did a bunch of research beforehand, but not as much as I would have liked to. But one thing that is so interesting to me is the amount of like jury tampering that happened in this case.
In this case?
Yeah, because this was before they were like sequestering juries.
Okay. Before they like did like the whole audition type process where they would like say no juror?
They did the audition process or whatever, right? Okay. But with like OJ, for example, a big part of that case was a lot of the people were going fucking crazy because they were jurors were locked.
No, I saw the FX thing. Yeah. It's like, yeah, they're in the hotel with no TV and like can't talk to each other. That's
so
like
they didn't have the hotel with no TV. So these people were out in society going out to bars, getting drunk, like secondhand, thirdhand, talking about what was happening in the case.
Crazy.
So, and since they didn't put the case in a different county or in a different state, which they will do if it's like a very emotional case locally.
Right.
They did not do that with this. So this is all like locals, and which is why we'll see at the very beginning of this movie, no one else will see it, I don't think at this point, but you and I saw it earlier. Uh-huh. There's a shit ton of people in the snow.
That's one of the notes I took, is there are so many people in this courtroom.
Yeah, and this is also like, people were in the snow. They had spots. They thought they were getting in. So like, this is a big deal for any part of the country.
No doubt.
But especially in a place like New Hampshire, movie stars don't go there. Mm-mm. Like, this isn't a place where all that happens. So this is some hot shit that happened. And it really is. This is a crazy case.
Right.
Okay. So we're going to open up on a young couple of boys. They're sitting in a car. One of them looks like he's passed out. We see that one of them enters a house quiet. We see a different young boy enter a house quietly. He calls for a dog named Haley. And then two young teenage boys jump out with knives. And he's like, what's this? So this is Greg Smart. And he's like just confused, coming home, about to get murdered, doesn't know it.
Has no idea he's about to get fucking murdered.
So one of the guys tells him to shut up, hand over his wallet. He's like, take it all. And then
a wedding ring too.
He's like, no, 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 no. He's like, not my wedding ring. So they shoot him.
Yes, they do.
It's awful. They run out to the getaway car. They get away with it. So then we go to the busy court, which we mentioned earlier, the aforementioned busy court. There's a bunch of people waiting. There's no seats left. And then we hear the opening statement from the prosecution. And basically, we don't need to hear this because you can guess what it is. She was a hot media teacher at this school. Everyone loved her.
Mm-hmm.
She had an affair with one of her students that was quite serious, and they were basically having sex all over town.
Yes.
So throughout this scene, Pamela's taking notes during the statement.
I noticed that too.
And her lawyer like reaches into his pocket and he takes out like a bunch of folded papers. And it makes me think that I think before a case, the defense and prosecution have to submit their opening statements to each other. So the lawyer's like, you don't need to write this down, Pamela.
Exactly.
Like, here it is.
Right.
But she keeps going anyway, which is something interesting about her. And there's a few moments during this movie where you almost have to wonder, like, if Pamela is just intellectually misunderstood.
In what way do you mean miss? Yeah.
I'll point it out to you. What I mean by this is like she has a weird way of thinking. By weird, I mean she has a very different way of thinking about certain things. Like we're going to see this a little later on when she's like tallying up the wedding gifts.
Yeah.
Why do you think that's okay and everyone else knows it's not okay?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I initially thought maybe she's just trying to avoid eye contact with the jury, or maybe she's trying to make it look like, you know, she's got a hand
she's
on this case.
Taking it seriously.
You know, like, oh, yeah, like, I know what I'm doing. Like, I'm just going to write down everything this guy is saying. You
that's
know, like,
a good point.
Right.
But, and I also, by the way, like, I am the worst where, like, I will try and find any reason to excuse anyone for anything.
So I'm
like, maybe she's not all there.
Okay.
But that's also like not fair to say, as she's probably not in any way intellectually different, except for that she might just be a sociopath.
Might, I think, is like a tremendous understatement. I definitely think she's
probably too much benefit of the doubt.
Absolutely.
But I will say that unlike most of the things we watch on here, like everyone knows I'm Jodi Arias' biggest advocate. I will say truly, Pamela Smart fucking did this shit.
Oh, hell yeah.
I 100% believe it in a different way than I normally do. Because Lifetime movies are notorious for trying to like give the woman another side.
Right. No, but Helen Hunt definitely sold me on the fact that this lady is in fact absolutely batshit crazy.
What's so interesting too is that wasn't like Helen Hunt was sort of known for not being that good of an actress, like, well, I think especially during this phase in her career.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, the connoisseur of Helen Hunt's filmography, but I do know that I think she did already have an Oscar, at least one, right?
Well, she definitely has one now, but she also was on Mad About You, okay, which was like a big sitcom, and that would have started shortly after this. All and right. She became like America's sweetheart for a long time.
So this was kind of like early in her career, you would say? Or
this was early in her career.
Peak, no doubt.
And there was another movie she did that's like sort of famous virally because it's like a really hysterically bad scene of someone doing acid, and she like does acid and throws herself out of a window, and it's like iconic.
I've seen this on Twitter.
Yeah. So yes. that's like her, and so that's like sort of like the acting level she was known for at this juncture in her career.
Right, absolutely. And I would just like to point out that I could not stop thinking about the fact that she's like an 80s or 90s Blake Lively. Because I mean, I looked at her and I was just like, wow, like this literally looks like Ryan Reynolds' wife.
That is a take. Yes. I love that.
A Blake Lively mixed with a little bit of like a Jodie Foster in a way, you know.
Yeah,
but, you know,
she has that look to her. She definitely does. Yeah. It's very she looks very waspy.
Yes, very waspy. And I think that is, you know, part of that's maybe costume, part of that's maybe, you know, just the way the makeup
was
done.
Facial,
you know?
She has that facial build of like a rich white girl.
Right.
So basically, the prosecutor goes on to say that Pamela became worried that her husband Greg was going to find out about this affair she was having with the kid. And one night after she and Billy did it in her house, she was going to, she told him that she had to kill Greg if they wanted to continue.
Right.
For 2 weeks after, she basically harassed him every day to get the job done.
Oh my God, yeah.
If you want to hear the exact statement, which I'm pretty sure is real, you can just go look it up. Right. So then we're going to cut back to Pamela during simpler times. This is her as a young girl. She's in her bedroom listening to some heavy metal music on her Walkman. Her feet are propped up against the wall. It's a perfect teenager's bedroom. One thing to know, though, about Pamela Smart is that she was only 22 when all of this happened. So I keep going back and forth personally when I was watching this scene between being like, it's kind of pathetic. Like, you're still living in your teenage bedroom at your parents' house.
Not to mention, she has a fiancé at this point.
And, she has a goddamn fiancé.
Like, the mom has to come in and be like, oh, hey, your fiancé is on the phone. Like, I don't know how life was back during this time, but I feel like I wouldn't want my mom telling me that my fiance is calling me.
Yeah, that seems very like, I mean, it's very 80s and
90s. Is it very New Hampshire? Is it like small community type?
It's very 80s and 90s. Like, it's just like, it was okay to do stuff, like live with your parents and be like, I mean, also it's That's a little fair. Bit religious, right? Like to right. be like, you're not going to live with your fiance until you're married.
Sure, sure. Okay.
And he had just gone, well, I mean, it's weird. Like in our world now, it's like weird the way that people would just let their kids go run around in the dark all night. Like,
right,
you know,
right.
Like,
no doubt.
We just don't do that shit anymore.
No,
but
no, we do not.
It's a lot of this movie though is very, oh my God, that is so 80s. That is so 90s.
Very much so. Exactly. And like I mentioned earlier, like it's kind of, you could tell it's in that transitional period from when the 80s became the 90s because you got like a lot of Twin Peaks aspects to it in the filmography.
Yeah.
And you know, the captioning, you know,
you
got to
hit it with the font. What was your comment about the font?
Yeah. So when you see the credits roll in, it's kind of that very 80s, you know, block font with the underlining and the italicized, you know, letters
and that
stuff.
Shadow. You got to have that shadow on that letter.
Like, if you go look at any news, like news broadcasts in the 80s, they had the same exact like font on their.
Do you think that that's a little bit of like a nod to her wanting to be a news anchor?
It could be. It could be.
And I gotta
say,
there's
a lot of different nods in this movie. Right. Yeah, but
for sure.
I didn't even think about that, but totally.
But yeah, no, I think that also just, we'll play this clip, but just for everyone out there, this was a cruel time to women. Women did not look good in the styles of that era. No. Seeing the 90s come back for me wasn't that traumatizing as much as the early 2000s will be, but no one looked good. Like,
yeah.
This isn't like, it wasn't the most flattering. Like, you had to be a very pretty person to kind of pull this off.
Right,
let's
absolutely.
Play 446 to 748.
Okay, cool.
Hello?
Can I interest you in some term life insurance, ma'am?
You got the job at Northeastern.
Dateline, New Hampshire.
Greg Smart follows in footsteps of Father Bill. World to become a more secure place as of Monday.
Well, congratulations, Greg. That's good news.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Listen, have you seen that fiancée of mine lately?
Greg's on the phone. He got the job. You really got it?
How could they resist? So, can you pack a bag in an hour?
For what?
Well, I figured we'd spend my last weekend of freedom having a wicked good time in Boston, huh?
What do you mean, last weekend?
Pammy, it's a figure of speech. So what, I'll pick you up at 6?
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye. This is wonderful. I think this is just what Greg needs.
What?
I just meant he could do with a bit of maturing. There's nothing like a real profession to do the trick.
Hey, I have a 6:30 dinner reservation. Come on, let's move. We're going to hit some Friday night traffic.
Hair, what happened to your hair?
Oh, the barber's still sweeping it up even as we speak. Sorry, babe, it had to go. You know, I'm a big-time corporate exec now.
It was so long. It was so beautiful.
I know. And it's all for you.
I don't want it in an envelope, Greg. I want it on your head.
It's so wild. You look...
Pam, I may look like Donald Trump, but I still feel like Jon Bon Jovi.
It's not funny, Greg.
Honey, look. In a couple of months, after I've knocked them all dead with my sales magic, I'll grow back and nobody's gonna care. In the meantime, I gotta make an impression, right?
I mean, it's just part of the game.
I mean, you don't wear your spiked heels and your sequin bustier to the school district, do you? It's the same thing, right?
I guess.
Come on, Pam. It's just hair. Don't let it ruin our weekend. I'm still me. And I got all kinds of fun planned for it.
I better go pack my spikes and sequins.
Okay, so we have some... So you made us laugh really hard when we were right when we were talking about this clip as we were seeing it. I was like, see, he's like hot. He's like really charming. I really like him. And you go, yeah, man, he deserved better than what he got.
Oh, dude. I mean, I think I'm just like stating the fucking obvious, to be honest.
No, it's true. I mean, no one deserves what he went through.
No.
But he's hot. Like, I don't know what it is. I have like a crush on this actor. I never have a crush on like the male lead. I'm always like, ew, he's disgusting.
Do you think it's because of like his personality? Because they definitely
exaggerate. It's 100% because of his personality.
Ugly personality.
He comes across to me like a really sane and grounded Jim Carrey.
Okay.
Like,
yeah,
where I'm like,
sure.
You've got like a goofiness
like a
to you.
Like Simon Birch, Jim Carrey.
Yeah, like you've got this like lovely goofiness to you.
Right.
And like you're like a really like sweet guy, but yeah. Like you've also, yeah. And
it's just, you definitely like the director, the writers, everybody wanted you to just fall in love with this guy because you'll see throughout
and
the movie.
And here I am.
Like the scenes are just like, it's like just. Scene after scene of him just becoming a better and better person. You
great
know what
person.
I mean?
I'm obsessed. Yeah,
like
got a nice job.
Yeah.
Family loves him. Everyone loves him. Now, we also, this is like the only scene I think we see her mother in, Pamela's mother.
Yes,
in
I noticed
all.
That too. Definitely.
Yeah. So, another thing that we want to talk about is the hair in the envelope.
Right.
So, this was before OJ. So, DNA wasn't an issue.
No, right? I just.
But my yeah. impulse seeing someone hand someone an envelope full of their DNA is like, don't ever do that.
Right. Well, I think it goes further than that, too, because they were getting married. You know what I mean? Like, everyone knew that they were going to be together. But it's just the fact that, like, you're giving, like, first of all, I want to know how the conversation went down with the barber. Like, hey, man, you mind just if I put some of this hair inside of an envelope to give to my fiance?
Yeah. He's donating it to
yeah,
a worthy cause.
That would be very, very weird.
Yeah, it is weird. I mean... I also think that right away, I don't know, I was turned off by the fact that she was so appalled by his haircut and couldn't hide it.
Yeah, this is the first red flag for me that, like, I mean, it just goes to show that, like, wow, you love me for my hair, man. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this, like, what if, you know, what if this was just to fall off? Like, what if I get older? You know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this just shows she's not in it long term, and we'll find that out very
soon. It also just shows that, like, that is, like, literally how superficial she is in, like, a way that that's how far as she thinks.
Oh, absolutely. No, I, she's definitely,
she's like, only thinking, like, on that physical level. I don't even think, like, yes, granted, yes, they probably, maybe they would split up and that would be terrible.
Right.
But, like, I think more than that, like, I don't think it ever even occurred to her. She lives in her own story.
Yeah, she does.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, she's not thinking about what the well, rest of the world's thinking.
Yeah, and she's just living in the past, and she's, you know, super down on herself and, you know, has all these goals for herself that she feels like she's limited to not be able to do, you know?
Yeah. And to find out after, like, the fact that at the very end of this movie that they hadn't even been married a year.
No, not even, like, a little under a year. He was 24, she was 22. That's insane. That's the craziest part to
me. So when he's saying to her, like, I could grow my hair back, like, it's not like he turned into this working stiff and didn't change his hair for a decade.
Exactly.
Like, this bitch couldn't even wait for him to get a second haircut.
Yeah, no. That's exactly right. It's funny you point that out because she didn't. Yeah, no. It looks like by the time he was killed, it looks as though his hair had barely grown at all. So.
And if a guy did that to a chick, I will say, fucking asshole.
Oh, totally. If, like, are you kidding
me? If your
me?
Girl comes home with a haircut and you don't like it, like, you better figure it out.
Oh, hell yeah, man. You love that. You know, like, that's rule number one.
So she goes to her room and she's sulking about this and she starts to pack up her bag, and it's a very movie suitcase where she's just putting, like, four loose shirts into a bag and, like, goes.
Right.
I've never packed a bag like that in my life.
Yeah.
Like, if I have a bag, that shit is, like, at least
right.
two quarters of the way full.
And this was kind of a, this is kind of a weird sequence because, I mean, we caught that they were going to go to Boston. I don't know. Was it for the night? I'm assuming, because she did pack very light. And then we just go, you know, straight into it, them, you know, like, having a good time at the hotel or whatnot.
Yeah,
you know?
And this is, like, an hour-long drive, by the way. New Hampshire to Boston's not far. Like,
right.
You go, if you're in Boston, you go over the border to get fireworks. It's
right.
really easy.
On 95, you take 95?
I think so.
Something like that? Okay.
Okay,
yeah.
So we cut back to the prosecutor in the courtroom asking the jury to ask themselves what kind of woman would do this. What kind of woman would sleep with her students and then have them kill her husband? What kind
right.
of soul would it take while friends and family mourn Greg's loss to cover herself?
Right, right.
What kind of woman is Pamela Smart? She's a dangerous woman.
That's right.
And then where do I go in my head? I'm like, is that where they got it for Ariana Grande?
Yeah, that's a
dangerous woman. Because the way it hit, I was like, fuck, dangerous woman. I mean, obviously it has new meaning now.
Oh, of course.
But I was like, that's like a nasty woman. Like, that's like
dangerous.
Nasty girl. Like,
I feel
it's
like
just
that,
like,
adjective at that time was very
dangerous
exactly.
woman.
That was very hard hitting.
Fuck.
Yeah.
So we see Pamela and Greg on their weekend away. He's lit a bunch of pink pillar candles and she comes in the room. She's very happy by all this. Wear all the clothes. Who needs clothes? They dance. Next we see them leave their church on their wedding day. Greg is so pumped. This is also very 80s.
Oh, he's so hyped. Walking down the steps.
He
like,
goes,
in the white church.
He's like,
yes. You know,
so
it's like,
sweet.
Yeah, he's hyped. She didn't seem that hyped. I didn't even see her mom there, you know, like, I don't think her side of the family was really present.
No, not at all. She actually says to Greg's mom, she's like, so thankful to be a part of the family. She feels closer to them than she feels to her own. And his parents are great.
Right.
Now, at the same time, I'm sitting there being like, I don't know, when one family takes over,
right?
That's never healthy.
And it's just bullshit, too, you know, because like, we find out later that she just keeps tabs in her head, like, of everything that these people do. Like, it's just. And obviously, she
doesn't. Do you
really,
think they're up their son's ass a little bit, though? I think they're a little up their son's ass.
Well, definitely. We'll see the son and the dad, they work together, you know? Like,
right.
That's the big thing, too. Like, this is his, presumably his only child, like, is what it seems like, you know?
Yeah.
That's the pride and joy of their family. We find out later that they literally, like, live in the same, like, townhome community, which is just fucking crazy. I would never let that happen if that was me in my adulthood.
Oh, for sure. But this is definitely that part of the country where, like, you can walk to your parents' house.
Oh, right. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they get home, they go through their honeymoon album with his parents. And then we're going to hear the defense lawyer giving his open statement. So first scene is just sort of them all going through. And then a very interesting scene with Pamela talking about the prices of the wedding goods, which is my oof. I love it. Pay attention, you guys, if you're listening. which you are because you're listening, because this scene's wild and I have thoughts and theories about it. But then after that, we're going to hear the defense.
I have some notes on this too, but yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Let's get in.
You just got back and you've already got your pictures organized. Remarkable.
Hey, how about some champagne?
Great.
Will you look at all these gifts? My Lord, you two made out. If Phil and I'd gotten these many gifts when we got married, he could have retired early.
That's right.
This toaster cost $275. Isn't it just like the most gorgeous thing you've ever seen?
For $275, it better be.
For $275, it better make the damn eggs and bacon as well.
Didn't Bill's brother Jeffrey give you a toaster?
He did, but it was only like $85. Oh, no, $65 on sale. So I took it back and got a credit toward another place setting of our china.
Hey, Pam.
Do you know how much all these things cost? I mean, did you go down to the store and price everything?
Of course, I know each and every price right down to the penny. I also made a whole computer printout. So I can tell you. Okay, for instance, the cheapest present from my side of the family was $95.
Do tell.
But the cheapest present from your side was only $55. The average...
Pam, cool it, will you? Nobody cares.
Yes, they do. I think it's important to know the value of things. The average on my side was 123, and the average on your side was 89. I think it's worth something to know these things, don't you?
Champagne? $16.95.
Did Pam in any way engage in the planning of the killing of her own husband? We will prove she absolutely did not. But we will only prove that if you all keep an open mind to the facts. All the facts. The Constitution grants each citizen the right to a fair trial. You must now see to it, then, that it happens in Exeter County. It is in your hands. And you must listen to everything in context. Context. Not little bits and pieces that seem to give you a kernel of truth, but rather you must take it in the context of the person from whom it is coming. If you do that, if you give Pamela Smart a fair trial, if you do not jump to conclusions, but rather let the process play out before you, then you will return with a not guilty verdict. And you might even end up a little angry, as I am, that this case was ever even brought to trial.
Pam?
So, first of all, let's start with your comment about the inflation on the toaster. Or should we start with the fact that right away we find out that Greg bribed a local,
yes,
a native.
Yeah, I would just like to comment on that. What I like to do when I watch movies is, it's 2019. I like to see if I feel fairly represented as a person of color.
Right.
And I mean, I got to be honest, going into this, I wasn't feeling the love, to be honest.
No.
I mean, we find the only presumably African-American actor in this film is presented in the form of a Kodak picture in a photo album and described as a native who took a bribe to let the white folk down onto a private island, which I thought was, damn, like,
you could. There you go. Okay, he took
right.
a bribe.
But,
that's
hey, man,
also
but,
that.
Hey, man, I get it.
So then you also said you spotted one black person in the
right.
court as well.
So if you're watching this movie and you want to pause at 12 minutes and 46 seconds, if you look in the top left corner, you can see the mouth and below of what appears to be an African-American woman sitting in the jury. I mean, hey, man, representation, right? That's a lifetime.
So, but I will, while it's unforgivable, I will also tell you that I did look up, because we were talking about this, the population of black people in the state of New Hampshire.
Right.
There are 15,000 black people in the entire state of New Hampshire.
You're lying.
The average age of everyone, of all black people in that state is 28 years old.
28. So it's fairly new. This movie is what, 28 years old, pretty much.
Right. And,
yeah.
But these are the current stats, by the way.
Oh, wow.
So that means if you were black and you were born in New Hampshire, you get the fuck out.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
cause
it,
no
there's
doubt.
No reason why
I
people
guess
are
I didn't really expect
they all die at 28.
Yeah.
Not likely. they're getting out.
I didn't expect New Hampshire to be, you know, a cornucopia of African American culture. Right, but right. At the same time, I mean, I'm not sure this was filmed in New Hampshire. Maybe their excuse is that they wanted to be as accurate as possible. But I'm sure some of the extras that showed up for this film.
No. Yeah, there's no way. I mean, this is also just like a blind spot in all movies. And especially Lifetime, they've struggled with that.
And I always tell my friends, everyone loves to notice, you know, when there's no white people in a building. Like, oh my God, there's no white people here. But you never hear somebody walk into a room and say, oh my God, there's no black people, or oh my God, there's no Mexicans. Mm-hmm. I mean, things are changing. It's 2019, you know?
Yeah. I'll tell you, when I went back to Boston recently, like, I got into a lift at the end of a long day, and the guy was like, how was your day? And I was like, he's like a 70-year-old white guy. Yeah. And I was like, honestly, I was like, everyone here is white. Yeah. I was like, I grew up here, so I didn't notice because I didn't know any differently. But I said, at a certain point, I just started counting. I was like, is there anyone who appears to not have like white skin?
Exactly.
I saw one Asian person. Yeah. And then I saw, I think, one probably like black girl, like very far down the street. Like after blocks of walking.
Are you in Massachusetts?
So I was in Massachusetts, but I was in Brookline, which is like, you know, it's more of a suburb, but it's also like very, it's just like Boston's very segregated. Like a lot of these, this is all very segregated.
I spent some time in the Back Bay area, like over there by Berkeley and whatnot.
And that's a little bit more flavorful.
Yeah, you'll see some like Indian people and you'll see some like, you know, Asian people. You'll see a few black people, but still, like, it's a sea of white faces, you know. Truly. Not something you're used to when you've spent so much time, you know, like I have, in both Texas and in Los Angeles, you know.
Right. Very, and I think change. Like, because the art scene and stuff is like all very multicultural in Boston. Boston's like obviously a big cultural city.
Yeah.
So there's lots of like introduction of other things. It's like very easy to think that you're exposed to a lot more than you are.
Right.
Because you're learning about other cultures. Oh, you're seeing for it. Sure. Or there's like pillars of the community that are like blowing up certain communities or whatever. But there's not like...
Right. Well, it's the same type of thing. Well, you go to museums, even like in LA or New York, and you know, it's a bunch of artifacts from, you know, these different countries that were basically stolen. You know what I mean? And we feel like we're cultured, you know, we feel like, hey man, these are all these people. You know what I mean? It's the same type of people that say, oh my God, like I have black friends, you know, I have this, that. But
exactly.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's just,
I went
just
to an African art exhibit.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. At LACMA, you know, I took my Tesla there parked on Wilshire.
Yeah.
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 Some black history for you. I mean, like right there by Lachman, that's where Biggie was shot.
Absolutely.
Nobody knows that, man. It's crazy. I get chills.
I know it right by the what's it called?
Peterson Automotive
Johnny
Museum.
Rockets in the car museum.
It's, the automotive museum.
There used to be a Johnny Rockets there. It's like a diner.
It's Johnny's or some shit. It's like been under construction for like...
No, Johnny's, I know what you're talking about. That's a place that I don't think is real.
You know, I know they shot Reservoir Dogs
I think they only shoot movies
you
there.
Because it's been under construction for a minute.
When you went down... what's the main street it's off
Wilshire
of?
And Fairfax?
Fairfax. Yeah. So when you went down Fairfax past the car museum, on like next to the car museum, not a diagonal, would be Johnny's.
Yeah,
there
the
was a Johnny
one, right?
Rockets next to it. But that's how old I am.
Okay, yeah. It's been probably what, like
10 years,
yeah.
Easily. So when we get home from this honeymoon, we're going to talk about the inflation on that toaster that you looked at.
No doubt.
So it's a $285
$275 toaster. Okay. Let's just make a comment, too. This woman went to the store and checked the prices of every single wedding gift that she received. She went to like different store. Like, it's not like the price tag was on these things. And they didn't have like Google back then, eBay, nothing. She went into the store and like wrote down the prices, like wrote down who gave her the gifts, like from what side of the family. She averaged out how much
money. She made a spreadsheet.
Yeah. So like her side of the family averaged like $123 per gift. And hey, man, Greg's family only averaged $89, you know? And somebody on her side of the family bought her a $275 toaster.
Yeah.
Which we adjusted for inflation, and that would come out in 2019 to about $540. $540 for a toaster. The most expensive toaster I saw on Amazon is $181, and it is able to toast 8 pieces of toast at once. This one was only able to do 4.
For a straight-up toaster, not even a toaster oven, that's that's obscene.
Oh.
There was never a time where someone just needed 4 pieces of bread so badly that it cost that amount of money.
And she also made a note to mention that one of her other uncles had bought her a $69 toaster. Mm-hmm. But, hey, man, she had to take that back. You 69. Know what I mean? Like, that's just no love Very from that cool. uncle. Right.
But, no, so this is the other thing. I think this is interesting for a few reasons. Because part of me was like, okay, this is all very tacky.
Yeah.
But if we're going to look at it through the eyes of Pamela, maybe she was just taking inventory of her new belongings. And they are an insurance family. She married into a family of insurers.
Right.
So they can't see that it's like, they can't not make any sense of her wanting to seek out the value of these items.
And their reaction isn't, you know, offended, even though I honestly think they should be, because regardless of whether or not.
I was offended.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to take inventory, but she literally averaged out how much money her side of the family spent and his side of the family spent on the gifts and made that like a big shady thing right
to
the parents'
face. But I will tell you this, there are probably very few married people listening to this who don't know exactly what everything they got for their wedding cost, because
we do
like registry now.
Fair enough, yeah.
Which is actually scary to think about. I was looking at this being like, wow, that must be really out of control. Like everyone rolling up with different gifts and just putting them down.
No way.
They have no idea what they're getting.
No way.
20 different pieces of crystal. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot.
But, it's crazy.
You know, I don't know. It's so wasteful to me.
It is. It is very wasteful. And I think it's crazy. But, like, if you watch the movie, you'll be amazed at the organizational skills, because they went from not living with each other to getting married. And now they have a house fully furnished.
Fully furnished.
With all the gifts, you know. Inside the house, and like they're organized in designated positions. So,
but for me, I wonder with Pamela, is it about image? Like, what's it about? Because she either is off in that, like, she has different values, which may or may not be an indication of, like, okay, you're the type of bitch who'd kill her husband,
right?
Or it may be that. I don't know, man. I'm just fucked up over it.
Yeah, I just honestly feel like she is just, you know, a glitz and glamour type of person. You know, she has no one really to show off to. You kind of realize that Greg is her only real friend, which is why she ends up making.
Oh my God, you're right.
That's why she ends up making friends with these 15-year-olds, because like she doesn't talk to anybody. She sits in her room and listens to Van Halen and just.
Oh my God, you're right.
Has
I
all
never...
this nostalgia about the past, you know, and like so. I mean, it goes. It's just.
It's also her recent past too. Like she literally got married and like 6 months earlier couldn't get over her fiance cutting his ponytail.
This woman
was not ready to go to this next step. But would she ever be?
No, I don't think so. I think that this is honestly something when you grow up in a city and a state as small as the one she grew up in, and you have somewhat of, you know, a sense of access to the outside world, like, you know, Van Halen and all this stuff, you know, they live in LA. Like, it's
a dream. Well, she lived in Florida.
She did live in Florida.
She was
but
the maiden of
now.
Metal.
She was the maiden of metal. No doubt. I did write that down. She worked for a radio station. She was the maiden of metal. She's super psyched to tell everybody that while the kids are giving their little anecdotes about drug use, she pipes in and lets everyone know that she was the maiden of metal. I think she's definitely just, she wishes she had a different life and wishes she did some things differently.
For sure. Her star did not take off soon enough. And we know that right away, because in the next scene after this, she is getting told that she's not good enough for Channel 9 News.
Nope.
Which
Channel
was
9,
is a real station.
Yes.
Wasn't good enough to be their news person. She said the station is too stupid to see her talent. She's going to spend her life teaching students how to plug in VCRs.
Right.
Okay, so basically she gets home and she's telling him this. What were you saying about him, your impression of him when this whole scene happened? Because I thought he was very sweet.
Yeah, let me just set the scene for you guys. We're looking at a beautiful fall day in the duplex. We got pumpkins, you know, on people's doorsteps, children running around having a good time. We go inside, we see a shot of Greg doing the dishes, family man. Let me just say, like, he washes and dries. He's like a single mother.
Right.
All right. Pam comes in from her Channel 9 audition, visibly frustrated, pacing back and forth. And the director really wanted to make a note of this pacing because she paces back and forth.
She goes. She goes on for a minute.
Like, she needs a while. Movement. She's very upset. Greg, though, could not have been more understanding.
He was so sweet, and he had things to do. He had to go to work. By the way, this whole scene for me was like hijacked by looking at the vase on the floor, like the big floor vase with all the pussy willows
in
it.
I do remember this, yes.
That was very, like, were you alive for that when people had big ass sticks of pussy willows?
I do have grandparents who remain in the 80s in terms of their interior decorating.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
My mom stuck a pussy willow up her nose when she was a child and had to go to the hospital and have it taken out.
I stuck 2 popcorn seeds up my nose as a child, and my mom didn't take me to the hospital. She's like, Dylan, you better just blow your nose really hard and get them out.
Were you trying to make popcorn?
Honestly, I was just fucking bored. I was like, you know what? Here's popcorn seeds. Let me see if I can get them. Because at the time, I thought, you know, like, the nose just goes straight to the mouth. So
I thought the same thing. I put a raisin in my nose when I was in watching Punky Brewster one day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Punk, and I was like, I knew about the Pussy Willow story. It was infamous in my family. My mom stuck Pussy Willow her nose. I had to go to the hospital. So I'm sitting there watching Punky Brewster. I decided to shove a raisin up my nose. And I'm like, Molly, this is it. You're going to have to go to the hospital. So I sat there and I got that I got that raisin out of my nose, but it took a while.
Yeah,
man.
It took me a while.
I had to just surgically go up there and get in there with my tiny little hands. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was not. I remember I was playing GameCube and I just stuck 2 of them up there, too. I didn't stop after one. I was like, 1 in each nostril. And I initially had them so you could see them poking out of my nose.
Oh, yeah.
And I tried to get them out. Sick. And they just kept going in there. It was just not. I was like probably 6 or 7 maybe.
You know, it's just like this is the shit you do when you're bored as a kid.
Absolutely.
That's why you
got to
keep those hands full with board games.
This is before iPads, you know, like all that shit.
You have
like,
nothing to do.
I'm on the cusp of that. You know what I mean? My little brother has not lived a day of his life without, you know, YouTube.
You just sat there when you were a kid. You just sat and you, you behave.
Right.
So. He's like, hey, you know what? Before I leave, no matter what it's worth, I'd rather have you give me the TV news than anybody. And he blows her a kiss.
Sweetheart.
So sweet.
Absolutely.
I love him.
Nice
guy. Love Greg. I'd leave my life behind for Greg.
Bro, honestly, I would probably hate Greg if he was real because I knew that any girl would choose Greg.
You'd be
Greg
like, I just could never be.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything that Greg is.
Yeah, no doubt. 100%.
So Pamela just has this look on her face when he's saying this. Like, she doesn't even hear what he's saying.
She does not care.
Right. And, like, I understand you can't, your man can't always put a smile on your face with some kind words, right? But he may as well have been talking to a fucking wall.
Oh.
And he might have been just, like, a dog barking. Not even, she probably would have given more of a reaction to, like, a barking dog.
Yeah, you know, this is honestly the first scene where I started to realize she doesn't really give a fuck
she
about it.
She ain't right.
She's stuck in the past,
she
you know.
She ain't right.
She made a commitment at 22 to get married. Bro, 22? Are you kidding me? Hell no.
No.
No way, man. Maybe that's how they do it in New Hampshire or whatever.
I think that's how they did it back then. Like, I mean, even then, like, that was still really young to get married, but it was much more, like,
much more acceptable, or not even acceptable, much more of the norm, I guess.
Yeah, when I was her age, when I was 22, not only did I think I'd probably be engaged by then, like when I was growing up, I was like, oh, I'll probably be engaged by 22, and I'll probably have like at least 1 kid by 25.
Yeah.
And then when I was like, you know, out here in LA at this age, all my friends were like, don't even fucking think about having a kid till you're 35.
Yeah.
Like,
no.
You don't need to worry
it's
about it.
It's very different out here.
And I was like, the fuck are you talking about? Like, my whole life will be over by the time I'm 35.
Right.
And here I am, 35 years old, killing it, don't want a child.
Yeah, no. See, I have friends.
I don't want to ruin someone's life.
Who are younger than me, 18, 19, and they're fucking, they have kids.
Yeah.
And that I have this weird theory that if you're from a small town, all you want to do is fuck. Because there's
that's
really
exactly
nothing else. And like, it is the truth, right?
It
and I'm
is.
Glad to hear
and
you say that.
And in the cold. No,
because
it's because
people
you're, are
fucking
yeah,
like,
you're bored.
Making, like, people are talking shit to me because I said that. You're bored as fuck. There's nothing to do. I used to date a girl up in Woodland, California, like up there, suburb of Sacramento. There was fucking nothing to do in that city.
Yeah.
We would sit in the hotel room and watch fucking Clueless. There was a fucking channel that played Clueless over and over again, and we just put it on. And
I love that channel.
I was like, hell no. Like, I can't do it. Like, there's nothing to do. I could drive to Sacramento and go to the Cheesecake Factory, and that was about it. But yeah. I go to the Cheesecake Factory every week at the fucking Americana. You know what I mean? Like, that's not exciting to me.
Cheesecake Factory. Well, I mean, no, it's true. It's why, like, so many people do drugs. It's why so many people have reckless sex. Yeah. It's why so many people drink and drive. There's fucking nothing to do. It's cold and it's terrible. Boring.
Yeah.
As most things are for you in life, though, boring. Mm-hmm. Like, anything good for you. But also a lot of the things that you, decisions you make are because you're fucking bored. So at the school, Pam was heading up some sort of student group. We started these at my school after Columbine, not to brag.
Yeah,
but they only went till like September 11th.
Yeah, not to brag or anything, but one of the shooters had the same name as me.
Oh, which one? And Columbine? Dylan. Yeah, oh, Dylan. Just the name Dylan,
yeah.
It's Eric Klebold.
Dylan Roof is the shooter of the church.
Yeah. We don't love him. Those are canceled. Those Dylans are canceled.
Oh, no doubt.
You're the head Dylan, as far as I'm concerned. Dylan from Beverly Hills 90210.
Okay, right. Luke Perry, RIP.
Yeah, we always RIP.
Absolutely.
Did you see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood yet?
I did.
RIP. Like, I just loved seeing him for even a moment.
I don't even remember who he played.
He played a cowboy.
He was the other actor, right?
He wasn't like a big part of the movie. I almost wondered, I think they were shooting it when he died.
I feel like, you know, I remember seeing them shooting for that a long time ago, honestly. They've been working on it for a minute. Because I remember one time they closed off, I think it was like right where El Coyote is.
I was
fucking tired as fuck driving, and they had that shit closed off for the film. I was like, damn.
And
like,
Musso and Franks, they shut down a bunch of stuff. They got some real estate. If you guys haven't seen that movie, it's been out for probably 8 months by the time you're hearing this. You gotta make a point. It's really good. So let's play this scene where she's rapping with some teens. They're doing a full rap sesh.
Yes.
They're absolutely discussing their problems and feelings. 1452 to 1808. After this, we're going to cut to a scene of her defense doing their opening statement in court. And then after that, we're going to cut back to a car where she's driving home some of her students. So we're going to see a nice little like sandwich flash forward, flashback.
Right.
Thing was still there. You know what I mean? Everything that everybody thought was bothering him, that the coke was supposed to take care of, it just seemed to bother him worse. I just figured the best thing to do is just to solve your problems. And that way, there's no reason to do the coke.
I think Billy's absolutely right. You know, there's like this belief that drugs and rock music kind of go together. Forget it. I mean, nobody's more into heavy metal than me. I was the DJ on this radio talk show at this college station in Florida. I was known as the Maiden of Metal. And so I did all the concerts. I hung out. I got to know the groups. Well, Eddie Van Halen came on my show this one time to talk about drugs. And he basically said the same things that Billy just said. So, here's the deal. I guess when the partying stops, the problems are still there. They're just staring at bloodshot eyes.
Poor, young, vulnerable Billy Flynn. How vulnerable, I ask you. How innocent. How pitiable. Malleable. Is a person who not once, but on three separate occasions, admittedly set out to kill Greg Smart. A person who admittedly put a .38 caliber revolver to the head of another human being. A human being who begged for his life. And then, without so much as a thought, pulled the trigger, watched the blood splatter, and then simply left his victim to die.
So, what do you do at school?
What do I do as media director?
Well, I didn't mean anything. I just...
No. It's a really good question. I do just about everything having to do with the media. I do the news releases. I'm in charge of getting out the District 21 newsletter. I take the pictures, I write the articles, I do the layout on the computer.
Wow, that sounds like fun almost.
It is fun. Jobs can be fun, you know.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
What do you want to do eventually?
Well, I was thinking, like, maybe you know, to be a journalist or something?
Well, you should come to the office and hang out. Really, I can always use the help. We could work on some different stuff together. See if you like it.
That'd be great. Thanks. I get out here.
Which one's your house?
It's right down there.
Okay, I can drive you.
Oh, it's okay. Really. Thanks. See you guys.
See ya.
If you come up here, I won't feel like I'm your chauffeur.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
So she drops this girl off like down the street from our house, which for myself or any other Seventh Heaven viewer or any viewer of any show, this, by the way, Seventh Heaven comes up every episode of this show now.
Okay.
That always means the teenager is homeless.
Yeah.
That's,
oh my
that's
God. I wrote
setup
that down
for the homeless teen.
For the remainder of my notes, I refer to her as homeless girl. So I'm not even kidding. So I'm glad that you said that.
No, it's always like the setup. By the way, what a miserable place to be homeless, like suburban New Hampshire. I'd die.
She has like this specific intersection too that she wants to be dropped off at too. Like if you watch it, she like cuts and is like, oh, stop right here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was definitely something that
or
I
or that means
was
like
weird.
Your parents like a really bad addict and they hit you and so you can't come near the house and
right,
see like how
right.
unkempt
but normally,
the yard
yeah,
is.
Exactly.
Yeah. But anyway, so Maiden of Metal is fucking iconic. You brought up an amazing point,
right.
Which is that no one fucking asked her. No one mentioned music.
Yeah, not a single fucking person asked her.
Also, like, I think Billy, you also, another great point. So the whole scene with the hair, with his hair earlier, Greg's hair,
mm-hmm.
is to lead up to the fact that she likes a metal boy.
Right,
and
no
when
doubt.
We meet Billy, he's sitting there in a leather jacket with a full mullet, looking very like Jon Bon Jovi, sort of killing it.
Some David Lee Roth going on. No doubt at all.
He is serving some, like, he has that sort of, like, Culkin brother look, though, to him as an actor. Like,
yeah,
he has these pouty
exactly
lips
mean.
And
like,
sort of, like, a, you know, just, like, a sad
kind of like
eye.
Like skinny, like, malnourished type, you know, like, like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, no, like a Jared Leto young.
He has that thing to him, for sure. And so, this whole scene, though, is so interesting. You bring up a great point, which is that, again, no one asked her, no one mentioned music. He's just talking about him using cocaine two or three times, which, like, at no point does she say, like, that's really bad.
No.
Or,
and this is literally, like, this is, we see that this is like a drug-type meeting where you go and you talk about addiction and stuff. And he's giving this anecdote about how he used to use cocaine to solve his problems, and he realized the problems are still there.
Yeah.
And she doesn't touch on that at all.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, probably also a big problem with cocaine is staying up until it wears off.
Yeah, no.
Like when he's like, I was up, like, you know, and then when the cocaine wore off, I still had my problems. I was like, well, yeah, you need to take a Xanax and go to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. You need to do something about that. Or just downgrade to Adderall. Same thing.
Yeah, something.
Less
you can't
effects.
Stay up all night on cocaine. That's not going to solve your problems.
No,
you
it's
need
not.
A night's sleep after that and then
right.
a pizza when you wake up.
And you're 15, dude.
Yeah,
you know
no.
what I mean?
And
like,
by the way,
on.
Like, that's some dark shit, like doing I like where does coke even come from in this part of the country?
Right.
I was very sheltered to drugs
and
throughout
to
all
mention,
of my teen years.
This is very dark, yet she doesn't even comment on it and goes straight into talking about how she used to be
yeah,
a,
I'm a
disc
fucking
jockey
DJ yeah
at, a radio station in Florida.
So also another great thing I didn't even realize is that so Haley, her dog is named Haley because of Van Halen.
Okay. I thought it was Bailey, but it makes sense as Haley. Yeah, right.
And then her license plate is
Halen. Yes.
And she like is like living on like hanging on this one time she met Eddie Van Halen.
At the radio station as
she's
the Maiden of Metal.
She's fucking obsessed. What if he wrote her a letter in prison? She'd kill herself. That would be it for her. That's all she
it's
needs.
It's definitely some like Jodie Foster and the guy who tried to shoot Reagan thing. What was it? John Hinckley. Like
oh,
some obsession shit going
yeah,
on. Here,
yeah,
no
yeah,
doubt,
yeah.
Because
no, for sure.
She's clinging on to this, like with the hair, the license plate, The music, every song she plays is Van Halen, pretty much. You know, the posters.
But how can you have a man like my Gregory Smart, and just be only into the hair? Is this where her interests begin and end?
You know what? I think it goes deeper than the hair. I think it's the fact that they were such metalheads together, and then now he's selling insurance. And I love that. I don't know if this guy actually sold insurance, but that is the perfect job for this part. Like, it's the most boring looking thing in the world, where you wear a suit and you go in with your haircut and you shake hands with old people.
It's also very like anti-Reagan era, where you're turning into my dad. You're a baby boomer now.
Right,
like, you're like, you
exactly.
know, like it's that very like you've betrayed our
right.
culture.
Some late 80s stuff, no doubt. Yeah,
but it's like, not punk rock. Like, that's the saddest part about it, because like punk rock, I feel like, okay, they have a message. They're like anti this. Hair metal bands, like, they have an actual hair metal band has no problem becoming corporate. They want to sell their records.
Let me tell you, Kiss has no underlying messages in their lyrics, I don't think.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neither does Van Halen,
so,
to be honest.
So she gets Billy in the front seat of the car because she feels like a chauffeur at this point, having dropped off the homeless girl at the railroad track. And she's like, hey, I saw you playing air guitar back there. Do you play real guitar?
Which, like,
it's so fucking, like, if a dude said that to me, I'd be like, you're so gross.
He's like, not really. I've just been, like, really trying to, like, get into it, though. And, she is just so into this shit, too. Like, you could see her, like, looking through the rearview mirror, like, almost crashing the fucking car a few times because she's trying to see his licks on the fucking air guitar back there. And, like, he is going real air guitar. Like, ever saw somebody do this, I'd be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, but he's getting into it, and
he's like doing all the chords and shit. He's there.
Yeah, no, she's damn near like at full sail, to be honest, because like she's no problem, like, to the homeless girl, get the fuck out of my car. Billy comes sit in the front seat, wastes no time to ask about the air guitar.
No, not at all. And she's like, also takes this as another chance to expand upon her like illustrious history of building up the metal community. But then she pulls up to his place and she's like, you did really great that night with your, you know, tonight with your story about drugs. Everyone thought so. And then she goes, you know what, listen, if you really want to play guitar, you just have to practice. Just remember, if you need something bad enough and you don't give up, you can have anything you want. It was nice to meet you.
No doubt.
Yeah, I know. And like, I actually didn't even realize that till I read it in my fucking notes just now.
Right. And I wrote down, I don't know if any of the listeners are familiar with literature, but she gives off a very Holden Caulfield vibe.
Yeah.
In terms of like catching the rye, where it's just like you're super narcissistic and you think the whole world is out to get you, and you know, like, you're the only sane person, but in reality you're fucking crazy.
Yeah, but Holden, you know, Caulfield, I mean, was also a true G.
Oh, dude,
she
that's
is
my
not,
favorite book. No
Pam,
doubt.
Pamela Smart is not a true G.
No, exactly. But you got people who will say Holden Caulfield's a spoiled brat, like,
oh,
all
he's
this
awful.
Shit. You know, yeah, no doubt. But I wrote that down, and also I wrote down that during this first interaction, it looks as though Billy, you can't really tell that he's into her, because he seems kind of confused that this fucking teacher's hitting on him.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? This is a freshman in high school. You
it's
know
also
I mean?
A little disjointed, too, though. Like, it leaves a lot of room open for, like, are you, like, am I flirting with you?
Exactly.
Like, and so you wonder, like, is she inappropriate or...
Yeah.
Is this normal?
No, that's very true.
So the whole family, they're gathered around the piano.
It's Christmas time. Yeah.
Okay, it's Christmas time, bitch. Greg is pretty drunk, and they're all singing 12 Days of Christmas, which the whole family despite...
Five onion rings.
I truly laughed.
Yeah,
in
me
my
too.
Place.
Funny.
And I also died, because once he's hitting the nog, that's my thing, is I always say you got to hit the nog
you gotta
at
keep
Christmas.
Him away from the nog. He's getting too into the nog right now.
He had
Pam's
to
hating
50
her
nog-
fucking life. I'm telling.
30 to 50 nogs.
30 to 50 nogs, no doubt.
Dude, he had like 30 to 50 nogs in 3 to 5 minutes, 30 dude.
30 to 50 carol nogs while he was singing Christmas carols.
Yeah, he fucking loved his nogs, dude. I do love eggnog. We were talking about this
too,
a little bit before. Shout out to Christina Lopez for the Coquito recipe. If you guys haven't had Coquito, it's Puerto Rican eggnog, and it's the fucking shit. Christina has a video somewhere on the internet making it with her family. So on the drive home, Greg is really fucking wasted, and he's reciting The Night Before Christmas, and she's like, are you going to do the whole fucking thing? Like, stop. I'm sick of it.
She actually tells him to can it. I wrote that down, which at that time was like, shut the fuck up in New Hampshire language, I'm assuming.
I mean, it's very like 80s language.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's also like them trying to avoid swears, which is great for our overall our list, because this movie's not going to score particularly high based on the acting, for example.
Right.
The story has left us some loose ends, though.
Not to mention, this originally aired, I read, on CBS. So, like, it was during prime time, and, you know, like...
It's a Mao. It's a movie of the week.
It's can it, man. Can it.
Yeah.
That's all you can go, you know?
So, he seems annoyed that she's not in the Christmas spirit, and he tells her, no mistletoe for you when you get home, or Mr. Toe.
I didn't even catch that.
Truly. And then the dad's like, Mr. Toe. And so, the whole family's, like, a little shit-faced. They're having fun. Pamela's like, I guess, girl doesn't drink.
No. Well, I just don't think that she felt the emotional connection anymore. I think she felt trapped at this point.
Yeah.
She had already kind of fallen in love with Billy, seeing him play air guitar back there.
I will tell you this, though. Because, like, it does seem to be all about Greg's family. And it's okay if she's not close with hers, you know.
Right.
Is it? I don't know. But I will tell you that it can be a lot when you're married to someone and they're really involved with their family.
Like,
that can be a real toxic brew. Like, is it a certain point you're like, did I marry you?
Exactly.
Or did I marry these motherfuckers?
Exactly.
Like, she didn't. This is also, like, a big Irish Catholic family, I assume, or something of the sort.
We all know the in-law jokes, too. You know,
tons of brothers and sisters.
Which I just think she's given up any care at this point, because she tells him to shut up right in front of his parents, you know, and then you get the very dramatic look out the window for the remainder of the ride home.
So she's like, how many nogs have you even had? This is disgusting. And the mom's like, you know what? That's enough, Pamela. And he's like, I'm sorry. I just can't stand it. I can't stand when he gets drunk like this.
Yeah.
So that's also fair.
Right.
Like, there's a few hints throughout this that Greg likes to overdrink.
Yeah, there is. But see, the thing is, the problem is that it's just, I have such a biased view against Pam. Because, like, I'm just like, you had him fucking murdered. But, like, she does, like, bring up a lot of things, that like he's an alcoholic, you know.
But then also, she married someone whose drinking she was uncomfortable with. Like, it's not, they've been not even married a year. It's not like they got married and then all of a sudden he's a fucking...
alcoholic, yeah.
A Gregnog addict. That's what I almost called it. I almost called it Gregnog.
That's crazy.
I really did. But yeah, so anyway, that night his parents are in bed. I love this because it's so like the mom's just laying in bed with her Reader's Digest. She's all
like, they're ready to hit the hay.
You know, she's ready to lay down. She has her magazine. And there's a lot of knocking at the door. And she's like, who's that knocking? So the husband's like, I'll go to the door. 2240 to 2521.
Greg, are you...
Dad, what are you doing here?
Did you hit your wife?
Did I what?
She's over at our house.
Your house? How the hell did she get there?
She walked in the cold after she says you hit her.
I hit her? Well, come on, Dad. You know I'd never do that.
Then what the hell happened, for crying out loud? She's hysterical over there.
I don't know. Look, she was bitching at me from the minute you dropped us off. I mean, it was just like it was in the car, you remember? Only worse. And I just wanted to crash, you know? I told her that we'd talk about it tomorrow, that right then all I wanted to do was sleep, but she wouldn't quit. And she's standing in the middle of the bathroom door. She wouldn't let me by, so I just pushed past her in the doorway. I mean, okay, maybe I used the side of my arm or something, but I barely touched her, for God's sake. I mean, come on, Dad. I know I'm blasted, but I'm not comatose.
Just go to bed. Listen, you two are married now. You've got to resolve your own problems, understand? You sure you don't want to stay down there with us tonight?
No, I'll be okay. I just want to sleep in my own house.
Okay. If you need anything, just call us.
Thank you. I know you guys have classes, so I'll talk fast. We need your help. The Florida Citrus Council is sponsoring this contest for the most creative commercial about orange juice. Here's the flyer.
So this is very clear to me at this point, especially on like another rewatching of this movie, that she just was done and she was looking for anything to get out.
Yeah, no doubt. I I have to agree. You know, and I think that the way that she went about this is like, she knew that the parents knew that Greg was drunk. And so she thought she could get away with, you know, telling little fibs and bullshit.
I mean, it does sound like there was an encounter between them. But at the same time, like, you know, I don't ever want to side with someone who's like accused of hitting someone. But at a certain point, especially the way she railed in the car, when a drunk person is drunk, let them go to fucking sleep. Trying to argue with a drunk person is,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's like worse than fighting with a exhausted toddler. We literally, like, you're not getting anywhere.
We see Greg asleep in his jeans and shoes and his belt, and it doesn't look like he could be hurting anybody. So that's what I'm saying. I think she was looking for something, wanted to get the parents involved, maybe on her side a little bit. Because, I mean, obviously, they're going to be on Greg's side. You know, that's their kid. But she just wanted to start a little something to kind of maybe throw some shade in there, throw some, you know, insecurity in the parents' minds, you know, just letting them know that something might be up with Greg.
I mean, she also could have been in this position where she's like, you know, if what she says later on about basically, like, if I leave him, I'm going to lose everything. She could have been trying to escalate. And by the way, like, anyone who listens to this podcast knows I typically do not ever make an excuse for, like, a man's behavior like this, especially in a real life story. But I will say that something about that specific scene, like her railing on him, like basically picking on him when he's drunk, that seems like something you're doing to basically get him to be like, I'm done. I'm fucking out.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, you're totally right. That is
because
something.
Like when you're railing on someone who can't defend themselves, like you're trying to get them to be like, I'm fucking out. And that's the only thing that she was holding on to, was that he was never going to agree to a divorce, and that was going to make things really difficult for her in the long run.
Yeah, but you just have to assume, too, that, I mean, like, they haven't been married that long, you know?
No.
So she is already starting this kind of behavior. It's definitely going to leave a bad taste in Greg's mouth.
And they're also too young. I mean, the dad's going up there being like, we can't solve fights for you anymore. Right. And I'm like, what do you mean anymore? Like, how long have you been
mediating these
fights between them? But she wants to go to sleep in her own bed. She curls up on the couch with the dog. And then in class the next day, Pam is telling everyone, all the little kids that are in her media class, Billy and then Cecilia. And then I think it's JR and like another girl. She's like, okay, so the Florida Citrus Council is holding a contest to see what schools can come up with the best commercials. This is true.
About orange juice or some shit,
right? This is literally the exact commercial that they were doing when this case started.
Okay.
And she's like, I don't want to just do a commercial, though. I want to do a music video.
Right.
And I also thought about this later, and I love this because she's from Florida. I think, or at least lived in Florida. So it's like, okay, like, she's in touch with the Florida Citrus Council. They didn't send that email out to everyone or whatever it was.
Right.
So the students are like, it's not possible to do a music video about orange juice. And she's like, look, of course we can. We can do anything we want. They can be wild. They can be outrageous. They can be funny. We can use the school equipment. Billy can use a video camera. And what they don't know, he can learn. I mean, this is an educational project.
No doubt. And we learned that there's also a grand prize. And she tells the students that her and Greg will be winning the trip, and that she can split the cash prize between all the students.
Yeah. I liked that they went along with that, too.
I did, too. I feel like she could have left the part out where she and her fucking husband are going to take the trip.
I was like, excuse me?
All right.
Because she said it like it makes so much sense. Yeah, my husband and I will take the trip, but we can all split the cash. And I was like, tell me you're not getting some of the cash, too.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
So anyway, she asked Cecilia to hang back because she wants to talk more about this. And she says, you know, you can be my intern if you want. You can work 8 hours a week with me. And she's like, I would love that. When can I start? And she's like, you can start today. And she goes, well, it's my first official day of intern duty. I have to tell you that Billy has a huge crush on you.
And by the way, guys, Cecilia is the homeless girl. I don't know if we commented on that. Yeah.
And he goes, oh, really? She goes, oh, really? He'll get over it. Which seems real. Like, it feels to me at the time that she didn't realize that she could maybe get Billy to kill her husband. Like, this could
be... Right, but I don't even know if that was on her mind. You think that was on her mind at this point?
No, I think I think that she was attracted to Billy, but knew it was wrong.
Oh, of course.
Because she's the teacher. Right. And then I think that, you know, her saying he'll get over it was her not realizing that he won't get over it and that he'll do anything for her.
And I think
and she already has this existing problem of a husband she wants to get rid of.
Right. I think it's important to note, too, that Pam is very open with these 15-year-old kids about everything, like her life, her fucking experiences, we learn later on, she's just fucking so open about her plan to kill her fucking husband. Like, it's just like, damn, like you're telling everyone in the school, basically.
Yeah, and very loose lips.
Yeah, no, it's very, very weird lady, no doubt.
So we see them shooting the music video, and this is another weird-ass moment. So Pam and the two girls are dressed like cavewomen waking up early, and the two teenage girls are wearing like black t-shirts with sort of like bone necklaces painted on them, and then like, I guess what one would consider a more masculine caveman look.
Yeah.
And then Pam's wearing like,
it's like leopard print.
One sleeve sort of Wilma Flintstone sexy little number.
Right. Obviously the Beyonce of this Destiny's Child.
She is the 100% the Beyonce of that Destiny's Child.
Not giving the others much scream time.
And the premise of this music video is that a bunch of hot cave women wake up and they start dancing.
And they smash oranges in order to get juice.
All that dancing makes them thirsty.
You're right.
And we know that because the cave women point to their mouths to be like, I'm thirsty.
Oh, it's right. Morning, that's, I'm thirsty. In case you guys didn't know, that's the language that cavemen and women thirsty. Use. Yeah.
So they start beating the oranges and eating them. After they, like, you know, they dance and they do this whole thing, she's covered in orange juice because she's been squeezing it on herself. And she's playing very sensually to camera.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I'm like, if this is a high school for, like, if this is a high school student contest and you're sending this into the Florida Citrus Council, I would be embarrassed.
Right. And not to mention, I didn't even fucking realize that she was going to be in the video, to be honest.
I don't think.
She's the star of the screen.
Anytime, like, your teacher was, like, in anything, it was so embarrassing, and it was always for comedic effect. Like, the teacher never like the hot one.
right But I feel like, because this is new for her, right? She's the media director. She's not necessarily a teacher. She's like an elective teacher,
and she doesn't even really want to be a teacher. Right. She like wants to be a news anchor, and like, exactly. This is like boring for her. She wants to be on camera.
I can kind of relate to this, though, having a crush on a teacher, though, because when I was in ninth grade, there was this brand new, like, teacher who was actually, like, the older sister of somebody in my grade. She was, like, 22.
Okay.
She just
became
the English teacher in ninth grade. And she was just so beautiful. And I was like, damn. Like, and we all of us had heard about, you know, like, these fucking teachers hooking up with students. We had a gym teacher that hooked up with a student for a minute.
Did you?
Of course.
And did they get fired?
Yeah, he got fired. He went to, like, fucking jail, too. So,
see, that's the other thing, too, is that there's always this, like, you know, double standard with female teachers hooking up with their male students.
I guess.
Because it's, like, this fantasy, hot for teacher, right? Which is, like, another metal song. I wonder if that
but it's never
influenced
it's
her.
Never a hot teacher that I see on the news. It's always like, ugh.
Oh, I always think they're like pretty like young girls.
Maybe
that's
I'm
the
just
thing
not
that's like
looking at these stories enough, but the ones that have been brought to my attention, the teacher's just like, it's like, damn, really? It's like, it had to be just like a dare thing where it's like, oh, but you can get the teacher to hook up with you.
Or
you
know, like they're kids that like really need a role model, and like they are taken under the wing of someone, and it's like sick and twisted, and they manipulate them like any old ass man that like gets his 16-year-old student to think they're gonna be together.
Or
like, it's just fucking nasty.
Or it's like super bad where like they just want to have sex before college so that they're good at it.
Maybe that's also possible.
You never know.
But yeah, I mean, she's a fucking predator. Like, that's the other thing too, is when you read all these news stories about like when it's a woman and a student having sex, like they're like, oh, they're having sex, when in reality, like, she's legally raping him.
Yeah, it's statutory, no doubt.
Yeah, for sure. And like, he's 15 years old. Like, she's manipulative as fuck. Like, this is one person
you
can't argue that she's manipulative.
Like,
yeah.
It gets to the point where it's like, would give me chills during the fucking movie, because it's like, damn, this fucking lady, man. It's
so,
like, yeah, it's crazy.
She asks Billy if she can take a shower in his room. And when she gets out of the shower, she's looking at Billy's room, and it looks an awful lot like her teenage bedroom, which you and I talked about.
It's
like,
definitely fucking her teenage bedroom. But that's beside the point.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it is, but it isn't. Like, it kind of states, like, shows her mental state, which is basically like, oh, this is hot. Like, it's like she's thinking like a teenager.
Right.
She wants to. And 22 is pretty young to want to recapture your youth, by the way.
No doubt. Like, well, exactly. Well, see, 22, man, like, I'm like 2 years away from 22. And I don't think that's old. You know what I mean? Maybe no. Compared to like a 15-year-old, sure.
But if you went into a high school girl's room, you'd probably look at this and be like, no. Oh my God, she's like a child. Like, yeah, this is so immature. Absolutely, like, the fact that she walks into this young 15-year-old boy's room as a 22-year-old woman and is like, this is hot. Like, right. She ain't right.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, that is fucking crazy.
So Cecilia's kind of pouting at the kitchen table a little bit. The homeless girl, and I do wonder if the whole time if Cecilia has a crush on Billy and like where that sort of helps or hurts things.
You know what I was kind of thinking? And I just fucking thought
of this.
You think
she has a crush on her?
No, I think that Cecilia, the whole reason that she had fucking Pam drop her off in the intersection is because we find out later in the movie that Cecilia thinks this is fucked up from the beginning. She thinks it's weird that they're hanging out with the teacher. So maybe she didn't want her mom seeing a fucking teacher drop her off at her house.
Probably.
That was maybe like the thing. Or like she didn't want her mom to see the fucking teacher drop her off under the bridge where they live because they're homeless. Truly.
They do clean it up later when they go to the police station together, though. I will say that was, for me, I was like, oh, she's not homeless. Okay. Well, we, or maybe, she and her mom keep themselves mom very well underneath
exactly,
that bridge.
Exactly. No doubt.
So there's a conversation between Billy and his mom about, you know, what happens when your teacher wants to take you out dancing, 2905 to 2932. And I do want to say before we start this, that, do you remember in the 90s people would buy like blue paper napkins or pink paper napkins based on their kitchen?
But not like party napkins. I was born at the end of the 90s, so I'm
okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Your fingers literally have 1999 tattooed on them, if you guys want like an image. He's a young boy.
I am.
So,
you know.
But they're using blue paper napkins, which to me is iconic because it's so wasteful, but just goes to show how like we are in a climate disaster now because people needed to use like specifically blue-colored paper napkins when
not
they were
to mention, yeah.
wasting
and
shit.
And they also just used a shit ton of hairspray in this movie. So, I mean, like, that's climate
change. They fucked
change.
Up
it's
the
hilarious.
Earth.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, 2905 to 2932.
Me and Cecilia are going dancing. Pam's taking us.
I just don't think it's appropriate for you to go out clubbing with one of your teachers.
She's not a teacher. She is me.
She's an adult.
I don't get it, Mom. You always complain there's not enough adults around to supervise whenever I want to go anywhere. Now you're getting just what you want.
I don't know.
And I don't care. If Dad were alive, he'd let me go.
I mean, so he's got daddy issues for sure. But it also looks like he has mommy issues.
Right. Well, I just think it's a rebellious thing. It's like, I mean, I can relate as a guy, you know, like your mom, you know, like, you know, like even as a fucking adult, sometimes I don't want to bring the girls I'm dating around my mom because, you know, it's embarrassing.
But he's not dating this girl. The mom brings up a really fucking good point. It is weird to go clubbing with your teacher.
Not only that, I'm surprised that this motherfucker is going clubbing and his mom's letting him when he's fucking 15, you know?
Right.
Like, I don't know what it's like in the fucking early 90s, but goddamn, like,
I mean, I will
tell
you.
It looked like they were at a fucking, like, bar.
Yeah, no. From my memory, like, underage clubs or all-age clubs were not common when I was growing up.
Yeah.
But they're there at this metal bar dancing. Pam is wearing a bra top and a jacket.
And a short jean skirt. And she's fucking going in on the grinding.
She's going in. And Cecilia's watching all of this from, like, a booth with, like, a real stink face on, which...
Yeah, she. I took that as, like, jealousy, but also uneasiness.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. I went to straight away to, like, oh, she's jealous about Billy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, maybe she's in love with Pam Smart.
I didn't think of that, but maybe. No doubt.
But
because
I think you're right. I think she just was in over her head.
Yeah.
Like, this is fucking weird. Like, my teacher's grinding on my classmate. Yeah. Like, we were just filming an orange juice video.
And I think this is definitely the turning point. I think Billy was definitely into it at this point because there's just no way he'd have a boner, first of all. Second of all.
No way. You don't dance with someone like that if you're not attracted
to them.
You're
15 and, like, you just started getting that shit, like, normally, like, on God, like, he definitely had some shit going on down there, and she knew it. She was trying to get something out of that, and she knew what she was doing, I think, in my opinion.
I've heard Too Close by Next. Yeah, for sure. So Billy waits for Pam the next day, and she says she wanted to see him because she mentioned his neighbor. He mentioned that his neighbor develops photos, and she needs help with that. And he's like, oh, you want me to get it done? She's like, yeah, and also, I need to know the truth while we're alone. Do you ever think about me when I'm not around? And he's like, yeah, I think about you all the time. Mm-hmm. I can't stop thinking about you. I don't know what to do. I don't know. What do you think about me when I'm not around? around seems so uncomfortable to me.
I think she knew that what she was getting into. I think she knew that he was definitely into her. And I think this is her way of kind of validating it for herself, you know, like kind of being like, let me make sure that this isn't fucking, you know, just me going crazy in my head. Let me make sure this fucking 15-year-old is manipulated so that I could take advantage of him.
I was such a dumbass, though. Like, if an adult asked me that when I was his age, I'd be like, think about you. I'd be like, I mean, I don't know. Like, when I know I'm coming here, like, I'm thinking, like, yeah, I'm going to go to Pam's class.
I just think I just think the writing is what it was. You know, like, it's just like they didn't know how to, like, because this is the scene where they kind of profess their love for each other.
Really. I know. I mean, also, this just might be how people talk, and I'm naive. But
maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
The next day, they're working on their video again. The girls are free tomorrow after church, so they ride off together on one of their mopeds. Billy and Pam go inside to work on setups, and he says that his mom's downstairs. Why the teacher's upstairs alone in the room when the mom's downstairs, I don't know.
This is the turning point scene for me.
This is everything.
It's like, what the fuck is happening, and how the hell do I get out of this?
This is when it started to go off the rails. So he's like, I have the pictures you asked me to develop. And she's like, did you look at them? And he says, yes, of course. Mm-hmm. And she's like, did you like them? What do you think they are? They're pictures of her in a bra and leggings.
That her friend took.
Yeah, for her modeling portfolio.
Yeah, and she's on like a hotel bed. You'll notice that the room has two fucking beds, and it's definitely a hotel. And I would say by 80s standards, she's what they would call half naked, because she had a bra on, and it looked like some sort of like maybe like, what do you call those, pantyhose and like panties.
They were like leggings with like, she had a thong underneath it though.
Okay.
And then, but then like we only saw the thong because she like pulls down the leggings. I mean, they were risque photos for
teased hair, everything. They were sexual in nature. Yeah.
But at best they were softcore porn. So like it is easy to argue that maybe these weren't the most sexual pictures, but they wouldn't be in 17 magazine, but they might have been if she was Britney Spears.
They would be in Teen Vogue today, but not back then.
Sure. I love this, though. You're right. So she never mentions friends at any point during this except to say that Becky took these pictures. Do you think Becky was Greg?
I don't know. I was thinking about this, too. I was like, maybe like she set up a self-timer, because the only thing I could think of is maybe they took these pictures.
This bitch can't possibly have a friend.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe they took these, her and Greg, when they went to Boston.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
But at the same time, like, why? For what reason? Greg is getting married to her.
Just to spice it up.
I guess.
Spice it up. Some boudoir photos.
They definitely needed like something else in their relationship. Because like Pam's like, here, take pictures of me. And Greg's like, okay.
Right. Yeah,
like,
this could have done very differently for her if she had introduced Billy to the bedroom. You know what I mean? Maybe she and Greg could go down on that pedophilia.
I just don't even fucking know what to say about this. Like, this would be the point where I would fucking call the police if I was 15.
Absolutely. This is where you at least like notify an adult.
But then get into the next part. What does she tell him to fucking do with these pictures?
So she's like, you can keep your favorite one if you want. And they sit down on the bed and he starts going through it. And he's like, I like this one. And so they lean in for a kiss. They start making out on the bed. And then we cut to a scene, a very brief scene of Greg, which they almost never do in Lifetime, where they give like a character besides the main character a whole different setup. This is like another day of shooting. But Greg is playing with his niece while the family's hanging out. And he tells Pam later on, he's like, hey, I wish you saw Ashley today. You know, I hope that she's so beautiful. She's so big. Like, she's so great.
Right.
I hope that we're this lucky when the time comes. But she's being really cold. She's not thinking about having a child with this man.
No, she's completely emotionally absent at this point. And once again, like you said, this scene, it starts off with just fucking showing Greg's this amazing, happy family man, and Pam's this cold-hearted bitch, basically.
Yeah, we go from her making out with a teenager to him being a family man.
So I guess they both like kids in different ways.
Exactly. They share a mutual love of kids, for sure. 34:49 to 36:15.
Pam, there may be a problem here that I'm not aware of.
I'm just tired. Let's not make a big issue out of it, okay?
No. No, as a matter of fact, it's not okay. Maybe it is about time we started making an issue out of this. I mean, you don't want to start having kids for a while or until your career gets off the ground, that's fine. But does that mean we're putting off sex until you're, what, hosting Good Morning America?
Where the hell are you going?
To get myself a beer. It's called oral gratification.
So called getting a beer gut.
What?
Nothing.
No. What's that supposed to mean?
Pam.
Why did you marry Greg Smart?
Because I loved him. I wanted to spend the rest of my life with him.
Would you speak up? I couldn't hear the last part of what you said.
I said I wanted to spend the rest of my life with him.
What was it about him you loved?
He was a very kind, gentle person. It was a lot of fun to be around.
Was the marriage happy?
Yes, extremely happy.
Okay. I mean, first of all, I will say that, like, kisses in these movies are so loud, and I tried my best to, like, get the, like, the clips up to the... It's so... loud. And for some reason, I always think of Helen Hunt as being a very loud kisser.
I feel like she gives off a loud kissing vibe.
It's a lot.
Probably, yeah. I don't know. Maybe she just sucks at it, and it's to make up for, like, trying to make the guy, like, actually feel like he's being kissed by giving the sound effects.
Yeah. So she and Billy are making out to heavy metal music in the Halen Mobile. Then we see a family come piling out of a trailer with bags of stuff.
Yeah. This is, I think, a nod to the fact that all of fucking Billy's friends, white trash, trailer park people.
Yeah, and also probably it's most likely that she was able to get kids to kill for on her behalf that needed the money.
Right, they're like poor kids, possibly uneducated, you know, based on the context that they're fucking living in.
For sure, you know what I mean? Or like going to be uneducated, you know what I mean? These right. are high school kids that don't really have a bright horizon.
What if
and
I
think
say,
that's true with Billy too, is that like he doesn't have like, you know, probably with the most like solid family unit in place, relationship
no
with his
way.
Mother or whatever.
No
like
way.
There's not a lot of hope there when you're in that position as a kid. And especially if people aren't constantly, he is going to project self-esteem.
Yeah, exactly.
But
it's not
hitting right.
But I mean, I definitely tell this is kind of his safe place with his fucking friends because, you know, you got good vibes in there. They got some bread out. They're making sandwiches. They're drinking some pop.
Yeah.
Is it called pop in New Hampshire?
No, it's called soda.
Okay, so they're drinking soda.
Or tonic.
Okay, oh, hey, man. Drinking some grape tonic.
Yeah, some tonic.
Yeah, no doubt. Having a good time, you know, doing their fucking thing, man. That's, yeah.
Ew, tonic. You're right. This family that lives in this trailer, like, it is interesting, though, because for whatever moral or lack of moral high ground that they were supposed to be portrayed for having because of their financial circumstance, if it wasn't for them later on, the mystery of who killed Greg Smart would have gone on for a lot longer.
Yeah, well, no doubt. I definitely think it could have gone on for a lot longer if it wasn't for these kids and their loudmouths and shit. But
and the dad.
Yeah, that's right. The dad did come in, which took a lot of balls. And we'll talk about that later, I guess.
Oh.
But like that took... Honestly, I don't think I would have done that.
What
coming
that
with my
took
fucking
is what
weapon.
I knew my mom would have absolutely done to me if I ever killed someone. My mom would turn my ass in a fucking second. She told me that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
She was like, if you ever break the law, like,
oh,
I will
sure.
turn you in.
I don't know about
in.
My mom, but my dad would definitely turn me in.
100%.
No doubt. Yeah.
So basically, Billy's telling JR, his friend,
okay.
that they are going to go away for the weekend. Greg Smart's going away for the weekend, so he's going to be shacking up with Pam. He
right.
needs JR to be his cover,
mm-hmm.
and if his mom calls at any point, to call him and say, you know, and he'll call from Pam's house.
Yeah.
So basically, his boy's like, yo, like, are you... fucking the
yeah,
teacher
fucking
or
teacher,
what
right.
and he was like I hope so this weekend
mm-hmm.
but we'll I don't know and he's basically like Cecilia's coming because Pam doesn't want it to look funny so it's just like Cecilia this poor girl is
yeah.
right away being pit against I don't know the law against herself
yeah
against,
she's
like,
definitely her. She's definitely the middleman here and it kind of sucks for her.
What teacher is like, you know what? I want to get away with fucking you, so let's involve another student.
I just think they thought Cecilia was dumb and they could take advantage of her. You know, like, oh, here's this like girl who
they're like
wants
this
to be
poor homeless
journalist.
Girl,
right? Exactly. Like, we'll give her some fucking bread crusts, like,
mm-hmm.
and shit. But I'd like to point out too that for those of you who don't watch it, Billy's wearing the same clothes in this scene as he was when he professed his love to to Pam, and he's also going to be wearing the same clothes in the next scene and the next day. So that just goes to show he probably doesn't have a lot of resources. Doesn't bring a bag to Pam's house either.
At least the costume department doesn't, you know?
I was going to say that, but hey, man, I'm devil's advocate maybe. You know, I think that maybe they just want to point out that, hey, man, Billy doesn't need a lot of clothes. Just needs a flannel and a blue t-shirt.
Yeah, and, you know, the interesting thing with Cecilia, too, that I didn't really know if they were ever trying to, like, directly imply this or not, is that I think they picked someone who's like pretty enough to be in a movie, but isn't like the hot high school girl.
They
for
definitely
a reason.
Did that on purpose because like this is the fucking, you know, this is the basic cliche girl you take advantage of, like the Duff, you know what I mean? Like that type of thing where it's just like, oh, you know, you got this girl, like it's everyone's best friend who like they take the fucking fall in every situation. That's who this girl was fucking designed by God to play in movies. Is what I
think that's what God intended.
That's exactly right. When he's creating her, he's like, you know what? I'm just going to make this girl passable.
Yeah, it sucks, dude. Pam, Billy, and Cecilia are sitting around downstairs. Poor Cecilia is sitting there on the couch watching this, like, I guess you could call it softcore porn. It's like women's
lady basically like dancing around her fucking lingerie. Yeah.
And it's hard to tell if that's like supposed to be a music video, but it seems like it's supposed to be a softcore porn.
You got the smooth jazz going on, you know, like the Seinfeld intro type of shit. boom, 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 boom. Like that type of shit. Yeah, no doubt.
So. So she's sitting there, and then like Pam and Billy are like fucking going at it. And I'm like, Pam, you've lost your mind.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
So they're like, upstairs at this point, right? Or they're
no. Sometimes. And then they're like, we're going upstairs. So Cecilia watches them walk upstairs. Disgusting.
I'm assuming she doesn't have the remote either because she keeps the porn on.
Yeah, she keeps it on.
Yeah.
And then the porn ends. And so she gets bored. She goes to the fridge. There's nothing there but a glass of wine or like a bottle of wine, which I think is interesting because like, she's not there to get fucked up. The only thing that's happening that weekend is that Billy's fucking this teacher.
That's exactly right.
Because if I was Cecilia, I'd be like, well, I mean, I guess my teacher's fucking this other student. I'm probably going to get drunk off of her liquor.
Here's the thing. I will say that I have been the friend who has another homie who's trying to fuck, and I go with him to break the ice, you know, because it's a new relationship. And I have ended up sitting on a fucking couch while two of my friends are fucking upstairs. However, this is a fucking teacher. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And
it's
like,
so uncomfortable.
I had the ability to fucking turn the TV on, change the channel, do whatever I want, turn the volume on so I didn't hear any sound effects. Cecilia, they give her no explanation. You know, they're just like, hey, like,
this is like before cell phones. Like, imagine just back in the day, like when I would babysit at houses, there was no phone, there was nothing to do. Like, if maybe I was lucky, the family would have a computer and I could use internet. But
there's no fucking magazines or anything.
You just kind of sit there.
Yeah, you're fucked.
You have nothing to do. So basically, Cecilia goes upstairs and she knocks on the door and she goes, I hope you guys are finished because I'm really bored.
Yeah.
So sad.
Stupid. No response. No. They were like, hold on, don't come in. So
then she opens the door, looks in the bedroom, like clocks it. We don't see it, but she clocks that something's happening. Yeah. And then she closes the door and walks out.
It's crazy because I don't know what the fuck she was expecting to see, but she had a look of shock on her face.
It also just goes to show how brazen they were because like neither one of them were like, shut the fucking door. Like they just kept going at it. Yeah. I think it was
they couldn't hear because all the Van Halen hair.
That could be that for sure. But I also wonder if they made her see it so that they could prove that they had a sexual relationship, like in this movie. We had to see Cecilia seeing it so that we could.
Because this is also foreshadowing, too.
Because it also could just be a giant he said, she said. If no one saw them having sex, how are we supposed to believe they were really having sex?
So now we know that they fucked.
Is it illegal for like an adult to kiss a minor?
I think it's any sort of contact that could be considered sexual.
Sexual, okay, there's that. Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Yeah, because technically, like, rape isn't always necessarily, like, penetration. You know what I mean? Like, it's other things, too. Like, sexual harassment can be considered shit, but yeah.
Okay, so Pam drops off Billy at his house the next day, 41:14 to 44:11.
Was last night your first time?
No.
Well, I'm no virgin either, but it was like, magical.
Me too.
Really?
Why? I don't know, you.
Well, I'm fine, I want.
was. You're everything a woman's supposed to be.
Oh, Billy.
Yeah, what's wrong?
Just, I'm so happy with you. All I want is you.
Me too, Pam. All I want is you.
But I don't think we can do this again.
What?
Because Greg goes away like that very, very rarely. And I'd want to be with you all the time.
Why don't you just divorce him, Pam? Then we could be together forever.
I would in a minute. But he'd take everything. It's all in his name, the car, the house. And he can be mean, Billy. If I left him, he'd go mad. He'd get revenge. He'd take the dog. He might even try to hurt me.
What do you mean?
Sometimes he gets drunk and he yells and screams and throws things. He tried to hit me once.
Damn, you gotta get yourself out of there.
I would. If I could, I would. But I can't. I feel so safe with you. Will you help me?
I'll do anything you say, Mom.
Do you know anyone who would kill someone?
What do you mean?
Greg. Do you know anyone who would kill Greg? It's the only way we can be together. It's the only way.
So this is, wow, so this is a lot.
It's a lot to digest, yeah.
One thing that jumps out to me in this scene for sure is that she says essentially that he tried to hit her once, which is going to change throughout this because once already he did hit her.
I did note that too.
And then now she says he hit her, he tried to hit her once.
Right.
And then later on in the movie, she's going to make it seem like she was routinely beaten by him.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
That it's going to be like her coming in with a black eye soon if someone doesn't stop Greg.
That was definitely my biggest note, too. And it's the fact that, and I mentioned this, I think at this point, she had got what she wanted from Billy. You know, they fucked. Maybe she didn't enjoy it. Maybe she realized she had to fucking get herself out of this in some way. Maybe she thought, if I get this kid to fucking kill my husband, he'll go to jail. No one will believe his shit. You know what I mean? There's a lot to digest here. But from this point on, it's totally, this fucking woman has no, like, empathy, just total sociopathic behavior. Like,
what day do you think that Pam Smart knew that she could get him to do this? Do you think it was the night that she dropped him off and he was playing air guitar? Do you think it was the time that when she, you know, when he came in the office and confessed his crush? Like,
I don't think she knew. I don't think she was completely confident that he would do it until she saw Greg dead. Because you'll learn in a fucking couple minutes and like throughout the rest of the movie that there's so many different times where he's like, oh my God, well, this happened. So she's probably thinking like, oh, this fucking kid, you know what I mean? Like, he's either going to do it or he's just going to fucking annoy me for the rest of my life. So, yeah, man, like, I'm not sure that she really knew at any point. I just think that she thought that if anybody would kill him, it would be fucking Billy.
Yeah, so we're going to pick up with more of that in a second. We do find out that Greg Smart and his dad have won Rookie of the Year. They won the award for the most sales.
Of the year,
he's
killing
it. I think we should wrap up part one right here. And then let's come back in on part two when we find Pam and Billy are still making out.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.